is New Hampshire Public Radio News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. For two decades, our guests today have worked in an area of politics called opposition research, which basically means that Alan Hoffman and Michael Rajabian are paid to dig up the dirt on candidates for public office. In last night's Republican debate, those accusations of Romney's Swiss bank accounts and whether Gingrich was indeed a lobbyist were most likely uncovered by an opposition researcher. It's a field many Americans look down upon as they lament how debased our political campaigns have become with all the mudslinging and personal attacks and negativity. But Hoffman and Rajabian don't see it that way. In fact, in a new book, they argue their line of work is actually improving American politics. Documenting the truth is more crucial than ever, they say, when today's news is prone to distortion, willful ignorance, and lies, and when untruths go viral in the blogosphere overnight. The book is called We're With Nobody, and in addition to making the case for Oppo research, the co-authors relate hilarious tales of tracking down that information, what happens once they hand it over to a campaign, and why they're so committed to hard paper documents, even in an era when everything's online. Today in The Exchange, the darker side of American politics, opposition research, and whether the light it shines into those dark corners helps or hurts our democracy. Let's hear from you. What role do you see political oppo research playing in our campaigns? Can it be positive or negative? What type of information crosses the line, in your opinion, and what's fair game? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. And Alan Hoffman joins us from New York City. Alan, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Also with us, Michael Rajabian, joining us from Mississippi. And Michael, welcome to you, too.
Thank you.
Well, and Michael, let's hit that big question right off the top. How do you feel your work is actually making American democracy better?
Well, I think that it serves the vital purpose it serves. It allows people to go into the voting booth with some knowledge of the candidates they're gonna choose. And who wants to go into a voting booth blind? So, I think that the work that we do, providing that information to the voting public through the campaigns we work on, is important. And without it, you just don't have the knowledge that you're going to need.
Well, and right at the outset, Alan, you say, the very first page, you say, in our jobs, we're with nobody. This book is for everybody. So what are you trying to say there?
Well, I'm trying to say that people don't, they say we hold politicians to a higher standard. Well, yeah, and we should. These are people that are going to be leading our country or leading our communities, and they're going to be making decisions that will affect all of our lives and passing laws that we're going to be subject to. So it's not a matter of just, are they someone that I like? It's someone that you have to know is out there, out front, honest, and those sorts of things can be documented. And so, yeah, we would like to sort of show people that you can find out what these guys are really about, and this is how we go about doing it.
Well, and lots of questions, and I'm sure you've encountered critiques about your work. How often is the research about personal transgressions, brushes with the law or married people having affairs, and how much is what you guys do about the issues? For example, you said you were against raising property taxes, but 10 years ago you actually voted in favor of raising property taxes. What's your focus, Michael?
It's all combined. I mean, when we go into a research project, we're looking at everything. So, how often there's a personal indiscretion. I mean, I don't know that I could give you a percentage on that, but we look at everything. We look at their, professional and personal lives. If they're an incumbent, we look at their record in office. But we also, I think it's important to look at their private lives too, to the extent that you can document that. I mean, when you're going with somebody's personal life, Alan and I talk about this all the time when we're talking to campaigns, it's a really tricky proposition because if you don't have the documents to back up what you're saying, it's useless. And that's kind of been our motto since we started this business. If we can't document it, then we can't use it. So, I give you an example of, Newt Gingrich's ex-wife. I watched that on television like everybody else did, but At the end of the day, you know, there was no documentation to back up what she said, and you know, consequently, I think that that was something that backfired and didn't work out. And obviously, one reason is because Gingrich attacked went on the attack on the, in the debate, but. That's a very tricky deal when you're working with somebody's personal life. You just got to take it, you know, each instance is different.
So what's more important to know then, Alan, though, in voters' minds or in your own minds? Is it more important to know that a candidate strayed in his or her marriage, or is it more important to know that they strayed from their political convictions? What do you think, Alan?
The latter, absolutely, is more important. And from our perspective, whether the candidate strayed from their marriage is only important in terms of how it might illustrate how they're going to lead. And so how the, if you've got examples of how they have led, those are much more important than whether or not they have a happy home life. But sometimes when you are researching the personal lives, which you have to do because these people are, you know, putting themselves forth to be leaders, you come across other things that are very important, and you may come across something that at first blush seems very personal and sort of an invasion of someone's privacy if they were an individual, you know, private citizen. But in terms of a leader and they've made some decisions that are telling that might indicate how they're going to perform in that role. So we go into it thinking everything is fair game up to a point, but you know, you're not really looking for something prurient that is just sort of looking for blood on in someone's background. You know, you're looking for something that says something about them as a potential leader.
You know, Michael, can you give us a for instance of what Alan's talking about there?
Well, I'll expand on what he said. I also think it applies to, you know, he was saying about how they'll lead, but in their record and what they've you know espoused in their lives. I mean, if you've got somebody who's, you know, espousing extremely conservative views, family values, and let's say, I don't know, an anti-gay marriage, for example, and then goes out and gets busted in some kind of sting operation in a bathroom somewhere. Well, you know, those kind of things, that hypocrisy is very important to people, what they say and what they do. And when we're doing our research, that's something we look at very closely to make those distinctions. And I think that's becoming more obvious, there are other organizations out there that are doing the same thing. And so those are the kinds of things we look at, just to expand on what he had just said.
I want to give out our phone number and let our listeners join us, and then so many more questions for both of you, including some of the criticism of opposition research that often comes up. Our number here on The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And today we're talking with the co-authors of a new book called We're With Nobody, Two Insiders Reveal the Dark Side of American Politics. They're partners in the political research firm Huffman and Rajabian, which conducts opposition research. They're also former journalists and political aides. Alan Huffman joins us from New York City, Michael Rajabian from Mississippi. And you can join us with your questions or comments, 1-800-892-6477. What role do you see political opposition research playing in our campaigns? Is it always a negative role, or are there some positive aspects as well? And what type of information about a candidate crosses the line, in your own opinion, and what do you think is fair game? Again, let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. And Alan, I think to you first, you know, people often say, hey, opposition research, it's gone too far. You're discouraging good people from running. Maybe somebody has a blemish in their past, but if the desire not to have that blemish see the light of day prevents them from running, you know, that's not a good thing. They might be a very able public servant. What do you think?
I think that's true to some degree. I think we do tend to seize, upon things that just excite us and that aren't necessarily the best indicators of whether or not the person is going to be a valuable leader. So I do think that the potential exists. We consider ourselves sort of, you know, finders of the truth, and we really do believe that. But if all you're looking for is details that are ultimately irrelevant, then you're wasting time and you're actually gumming up the works as far as the selection process goes. But we do feel like you've got to have a full understanding of the candidate, and so we divide our research up into, you know, yeah, their personal life, their professional life, whatever political history they have, and we just look at them in total and decide, you know, from based on that, and we look at our own candidate in exactly the same way, and to try to paint a picture of whether or not this person is going to make a worthy leader.
Have you guys ever, Michael, said to the person you're working for, look, we did Oppo research on you too, you know, Joe Smith, and guess what? You got too many skeletons. We don't advise you to run. Has it ever gotten to that point?
Well, I mean, there have been times when we sit down with a candidate and obviously point out, you know, the things that we found. But our job is not to advise or discourage. You know, our job is to provide them the facts and the report, and then they ultimately make that decision. But I'll say this: I think that it is important. You know, there are examples. There are a lot of folks who candidates who get into a race and don't really either don't do the self research or don't tell. You know, let the folks on their campaigns know what's in their background. And I think an example of that, to some degree, was Herman Cain. And I think that's a disservice because you owe it to your supporters and your campaign staff to let them know. And to think that the fallacy is for any candidate to think that they can skip through the minefields of their personal lives and come out on the other side, you know, unblemished. It's not going to happen. There's nothing in politics that stays hidden. And so I think if you do have that, I think it's just, you know, you've got to get it out there, and you've got to let your campaigns, you know, test it, poll it, see if you can get through it. And if you can't get through it, don't run. But there are ways to find that out if it's something that you can withstand during the course of an entire campaign.
That's real interesting, Alan. I love your thoughts, too. The mindset of some candidates in terms of how much they'll be able to skirt past troubles, either hide them or at least diminish their significance. It's amazing to me that people think they could hide anything these days, given the internet and all the flashlights being shown into people's dark corners. I'll get your thoughts on that, Alan, after a short break, and we'll start taking your calls, too. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. The book is called We're With Nobody, Two Insiders Reveal the Dark Side of American Politics. We're talking with opposition researchers Alan Huffman and Michael Rajabian today in The Exchange. And when we come back, we'll take your calls.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members. And support also comes to us from Core Orthopedic Sports Medicine Team, specialist in joint preservation and the treatment of sports-related injuries, 778-7975, Core Orthopedics, the art of wellness. And Golf and Ski Warehouse with stores in Hudson, Greenland, and West Lebanon, New Hampshire, and also in Scarborough, Maine, online at golfandskiwarehouse.com. More of The Exchange on NHPR, then at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. It's the Friday News Roundup. New Hampshire weather today, cloudy statewide. Any snow, sleet, and freezing rain ending in the North Country this afternoon. Highs there 30 to 35. Rain and freezing rain ending in central and southern portions of the state this afternoon. Highs 45 to 50. Tonight, partly cloudy for most of the state. Lows 25 to 30. Mostly cloudy in the North Country tonight with lows there from 15 to 20. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a new book looks at the dark side of American politics, opposition research. The title is We're With Nobody. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. What role do you see political opposition research playing in our current campaigns? From a voter's perspective, when is opposition research helpful? When is it not? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange at nhpr.org. The Exchange is now on Facebook, too. We hope you go to our page. You can join the conversation there. Our guests are Alan Huffman and Michael Rajabian. They're co-authors of the book and also partners in the political research firm Huffman and Rajabian. And gentlemen, before we go to our listeners, just a couple more questions. Alan, I did want your thoughts. It seems amazing that any candidate could think these days that he or she could hide anything. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more. You know, it's amazing to me that people do think that these things will stay submerged. I mean, you know, privacy is sort of out the window with Facebook and with everyone having a cell phone and with a camera and a recorder and all of these things. But I think a lot of times the candidates just don't realize the importance of what is in their history, or perhaps it's just an ego issue that they just believe that they can overcome it, and they don't always tell everyone what is in their history. And so we have to research them the same way we do their opponents. And you asked earlier whether we'd ever advise someone not to run, and as Michael pointed out, that's not really our role to offer that advice. But I think it's kind of been apparent to the campaign staff in a few cases where they looked at the report that our guy had way more problems than the opponent. And, you know, it's awkward. We don't win any popularity contests.
I can imagine.
Self-research, as we put it. But that's our job. We're not there to make everybody feel good. We're there to tell everybody the lay of the land.
How did you guys get involved in this line of work anyway, Michael?
Well, we were both, as you said at the outset, newspaper reporters and journalists, and we both took government jobs and worked for politicians. And when those, you know, we kind of got to the end of those and said, a friend of ours who we knew who was in politics, you know, asked us one day if we'd be interested in doing a project for him. We didn't really know what it was, but it had to do with a candidate, and asked us to, you know, just kind of put together some information, things that we would have done as a newspaper reporter. And we did. And we liked it and started doing more and more and more, and it just kind of took off, and we've been doing it now for 18 years.
Wow. Well, you know, getting to this point about your impact, again, on campaigns, on voters, a candidate for office isn't running for Model Citizen of the Year or the Mother Teresa Award. What do you think, guys? Does digging up the dirt on them distract we, the voters, from the fact that candidate X might actually have the skills that make him or her a very good governor or member of Congress? Are you guys making us distracted from the issues, Alan? What do you think?
No, I don't. I mean, you look at the way some campaigns are run and how ad campaigns are run, and sometimes we do cringe because it seems like what to us is a minor detail in the candidate's background it suddenly becomes hugely important. And you also never know what the voters are going to seize upon. Sometimes the voters will go after something that you thought was a minor detail. But again, we think it's important that you know everything you can about these people so that you aren't blindsided later on by their votes or the way they reacted to something. Because sometimes what's most interesting about a revelation about a candidate is how he reacts to it. And it isn't always just what the revelation itself tells you. It's how they handle the fact that it was revealed.
Now, that's real interesting. And the examples that come to mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, you know, Newt Gingrich sort of reacting by saying, you know, it's not true and there's no documentation and how dare the media pick on me, versus Herman Cain, who kind of stumbled around this thing and tried to hide things and then had to reveal things. So it's not just the information, it's how you react to it, Alan. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely. And I think what you're seeing, and obviously we didn't work on either one of those campaigns, so I can't speak, you know, authoritatively about it. But from where we sit with our experience, I would look at that and say Newt Gingrich has a lot of experience in opposition research and Herman Cain didn't. And you wonder, did he even do the research on himself? Because if we had been working for him in that capacity, we would have informed him, you know, this is what is going to come out, and you have to have a game plan for how you're going to deal with it. You can't be the deer caught in the headlights. And, you know, say what you want about Newt Gingrich, that at least he had enough experience in that realm that he had a clear reaction that he was prepared for.
And again, you gentlemen aren't working for any of these campaigns, but Michael, I'd love your thoughts too. You know, just as an observer, an informed observer, how else do you see opposition research being used in this Republican presidential campaign?
Well, I mean, what you see every day, let me say this too, to back up for a second. I think voters are incredibly intelligent. I do. And I think that at the end of the day, when regardless of the information that's coming out, they can ferret out what's important and what's not. And when they go into the voting booth, you know, they have a good idea of who they're looking for, who they want to lead them. And so, you know, I don't think it really distracts. I think it is just the opposite. It's very helpful to them. As far as what we're seeing now, you know, I think there's more, obviously, anybody who watches what's going on sees that there's more negative ads, negative debate, rhetoric coming out than ever before. I think we can discuss this in more detail, and Alan will tell you the same thing. A lot of this has to do with the super PACs that have kind of, you know, come into their own since that since the Supreme Court ruling, and it's just dumping so much money into these campaigns, into these ads. But what people have to remember is those ads don't get on TV just by themselves. They all start with opposition research. You know, you can't put something on TV if you don't have the research to back it up. So you have unlimited amounts of money that are going into this into these campaigns, and consequently, you're seeing it. This is why you're seeing this stuff on TV, and it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop in this campaign. It's not. I mean, unless there's some change in the law, it's not going to stop.
Although some of those ads, Michael, make wild claims and gross exaggerations of the truth, you know, taking a five-line quote and only using four words of that five-line quote. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if that's good opposition research in those ads. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's not the opposition research, and we don't give them just the four lines out of the five-line quote. We
right.
give them the whole quote.
Sure.
And it's what they decide to use with it. But, you know, a campaign's going to walk that line, and they're going to stretch it as far as they can stretch it. And, you know, that's nothing that's new. You know, this opposition research, this stuff has been going on since, you know, ancient Rome. And since there have been politicians. And whether, you know, we're looking at this and saying, man, this is so bad, but is it more civilized than it used to be? In a lot of ways, yeah. I mean, at least they don't, you know, cut off your head if you say something bad about somebody, but it's just, you know, it's just there. It's part of our landscape now, and it's for better or worse, that's what's going to happen.
Let's invite our listeners again to join us, guys. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Again, we want to know what you think about opposition research and the role that it plays in our current political campaigns. From your own voters' perspective, when do you find opposition research helpful in terms of picking a candidate, and when do you find it distracting and not helpful? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. First up is John in Epsom. Hi, John. Go ahead. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. My question is simply to ask for some comment on something not associated with election, but what happens after election. What are the ramifications of someone finding a skeleton after someone is in office? And there certainly have been examples in the past. I mean, the conventional wisdom is that J. Edgar Hoover stayed in for five decades because he had the goods on every president. And we also have heard that John Kennedy's Secret Service knew some very bad things about John Kennedy. And you say that, you know, it's impossible to find these things in today's internet days, but, you know, anything's possible. And maybe something like the FBI or something like an inner circle person finding these things could have the ability to coerce an elected official.
Interesting.
And
yeah.
I'll take my comment off the air.
Okay, John, thanks a lot. Any examples or thoughts that come to mind, Alan, from John's question? Thanks a lot, John.
Well, yes. I mean, I think specifically what he's talking about is what we're talking about, that this is the reason that you need opposition research, because as you hear about these things today, as these people become leaders, they are put in, there's more scrutiny placed on them. So, you know, it's even more important to look closely at them before they get into office. They're also going to have greater temptations once they're in office. I mean, it's just the reality of the situation. So, you know, you need to know as much as you can going in whether or not how this person is going to behave once they have that power. And so, yeah, we look at cases all the time where we think, okay, this guy, he got away with this when he was a city councilman, but he's not going to get away with it when he is in Congress, because everybody's going to be looking at him. The stakes are going to be higher. The temptations are going to be greater. But sometimes people ask all the time, what's the worst thing that you've ever found on somebody? Well, it depends on the race, because if you find something when someone is running for that city council post, and it's very telling and very indicative of the kinds of problems that you might see later on if they rise to higher office, then yeah, the opposition research has sort of served as a forewarning of the kinds of problems that John described, you know, when you get to the high levels.
You get to the high levels, and then you keep on someone in an office because he, as John says, has the goods on you. So you're saying, Alan, more scrutiny up front would help avoid that.
Absolutely. If you look at you know, sometimes people say, well, what difference does it make if the guy voted in his local precinct? Well, I mean, it's pretty simple, a simple jump. You know, if a guy is not voting in elections in his own precinct, how do you think he's going to vote? You know, what is his record going to be like voting in Congress? These things, it's just a matter of scale. And so a lot of times what seems like a minor detail is very illustrative of something that could have a huge impact further down the line.
John, thanks a lot for calling in. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. We're getting a picture of the dark side of American politics. Opposition research with two gentlemen who've been in the field for almost 20 years. Their new book is called We're With Nobody. Our guests are Alan Huffman and Michael Rajabian. Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477 or email us, exchange@nhpr.org. Here's an email that just came in, gentlemen, from Jim. He says, we don't have enough of this. A public office holder's finances, voting record, and how they might correlate should be public information in some easily accessible format. This is a great question, Jim. Thanks. On a couple levels. And Michael, just first of all, to his point that this should be available to everybody easily.
Well, I think it is becoming more and more available. You look at what states are doing across the country. You know, most of them now you can go online in state government and look at contracts. I mean, they post all the state contracts, the vendor contracts. You can go on there and research, you know, who's getting these contracts. If you're, you know, if you do the things that we do, then you take those and you look at if I'm looking at a candidate, then I'm comparing those things and I'm finding out, okay, did this guy help that guy get the contract? In exchange, did he get campaign contributions? The other thing I would say is there, you know, as opposed to, you know, back to what John said, his examples were of JFK and J. Edgar Hoover. Well, that's a different time, and the delivery mechanisms for information were limited. But we live in an environment now where those delivery mechanisms are unlimited. I mean, you can go anywhere, and everybody's putting it on there. And so I think that, you know, compared to what it used to be, I think we're light years ahead information-wise as far as somebody's background and the things that they do than we were.
So has the Internet made it easier or harder? Because in some instances, there's so much information, you got a lot more to pick through, Michael.
Well, when we do a research project, we do start off on the Internet, uh-huh. And it kind of builds a foundation. But we learned, you know, a while back, you can't rely on the Internet. Like you said, there are things on there that are not documented that are so close to sounding like they're true that you might believe they were. So at the end of the day, you know, if I'm looking at somebody, we're on the ground. We're going to where they live. We're going to the courthouse. You know, we're getting the documents, because if you rely just on the Internet, at some point it's going to fail you, and we've had examples of that. So no, you can't just do that. You have to look. You have to get the hard document and have it in your hand.
Good old fashioned shoe leather reporting, Michael.
Correct.
John, thanks a lot for that call. And guys, let's take another one. This is Ed in Laconia. Ed, thanks for joining us. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Well, my question would be to your guest. The comment was made earlier that, you know, quote, we want to know all the facts about the candidates, but yet it seems like the media sets what we hear. And one of the questions is, how do we find a site or a source that has a level playing field? For example, I know Mitt Romney has offshore bank accounts. Do I know anything about whether Newt Gingrich does? So how do you get a level playing field, I guess, is my question.
So sort of one-stop shopping for voter information, all the facts. Is that what you're asking, Ed?
Yes. Is that even possible?
Yeah.
And I'll take the comment, the response off the air.
Well, thanks, Ed. And for sure, voters feel like they're overwhelmed with information. Alan, what do you think?
I think that's a great question, and I wish more people were looking for what Ed is looking for. I think, you know, there are sites that you can go to, and I'll throw a couple of them out there. One of the problems that we face, going back to what you mentioned earlier about the Internet, is that things go viral on the Internet. You know, something gets forwarded on Facebook, and you read it, and maybe it supports your side, maybe it doesn't, but we don't generally look for the citations anymore because we're barraged with information constantly. And I get things all the time, and I'll be reading it and think, wow, this is really interesting. This is really telling. And then I'll keep searching for the citation. Where's the documentation mentioned? And it's not there. And we sort of treat documentation the way we look at the way we treat punctuation in email with sort of a casual disregard now because we get so much information moving through our lives. But there are places that you can go to check things specifically. There's PolitiFact and factcheck.org. There's sites that do nothing but vet statements that are made by politicians. There's no place you can go and find out everything that you need to know. I think the most important tool you have is your own reasons for wanting to know, is questioning when someone says something, what is that based on? But you can find out. There are sites that vet this information that are objective and are not affiliated with a party. So I would say that would be the first place I would go if I hear something. First of all, look for the citation. See what the documents they're citing, and then go to PolitiFact or factcheck.org or some of the other sites and see, what did they find? Does it come up?
Ed, thanks a lot for the call. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, join us with your questions or comments about opposition research today in The Exchange and the role it plays in political campaigns. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Yeah, Michael, just one more question about this documentation. It's interesting to me, you guys are adamant about hard copy documentation, even though everything is available online. That makes your job a little bit harder, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe a little bit, but, it's also, there's a reason to get on the ground and go to these places, because not only can you get the documentation and make sure it's what you saw online was verified, but, when we're doing research, we like to go to the towns, the cities where these candidates live, because it gives us a feel of what, the issues really are. It gives us we go in there and we talk to people, and they don't know who we are, but, we're kind of getting a feel of what they're interested in and what those issues are, and it helps us when we're looking for information. But yeah, we want that. We want to go to a campaign and say, okay, this is what we're telling you, and this is what you have to back it up with. And, I'll say this too. Most campaigns, because you kind of referred to this earlier, I would have to say in 18 years, I think most campaigns are very conscientious of the facts. The majority are, and the ones that we read about.
Michael, I'm sorry, I got to cut you off there for a short break, but I will let you pick it up in just a moment. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Doug Cole, president of Cole Gardens in Concord, New Hampshire. Oh, it's great on a busy day at the Garden Center. We'll hear a lot of our customers say, hey, I heard you on NHPR. It's just good to know that our word is getting out and they're hearing it. Yeah, we highly recommend other businesses to underwrite NHPR. We know the word gets out and we know it's a benefit.
To learn more about underwriting, visit the support page on nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Toadstool Bookshops presenting Kathleen Ferrari, autographing her new novel, McCullough's Woman, this Saturday at 11 a.m. at Lorden Plaza in Milford. And from Pelletieri Associates Warner, providing design, build, landscape, architecture, and fine gardening services for clients throughout northern New England and proud supporter of NHPR. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, Department of Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas joins us. Email us your questions for Commissioner Tumpas in advance, if you'd like, to exchange@nhpr.org. And then be sure to join us Monday morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, two longtime political opposition researchers talk about their new book, We're With Nobody. Our guests are Alan Huffman and Michael Rajabian. They are both former journalists and partners in the political research firm Huffman and Rajabian. Our number for you to join us with your questions or comments on opposition research is 1-800-892-6477. In your own opinion, what type of information about a candidate crosses the line of what's appropriate, and what do you think is fair game? As a voter, how much does opposition research help you make your choice? When do you think it gets in the way? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Michael, sorry I had to cut you off there. You were saying in this day and age, you've been impressed that most candidates and campaigns are very aware of how important it is to conduct good opposition research.
I did. And an example of that, when we do a project, you know, we're kind of, Alan and I are pretty much the first cogs in that wheel. So when a campaign begins, we're kind of the first guys out there. Just to give you an idea of what we do, we do our report, we put our information together, we give it to the campaign. It goes to the pollster. The pollster takes what we've done, devises his questions, tests them. What tests the best are what you end up seeing on TV, what you end up getting in your mailbox through direct mail, what newspapers get in the form of a press release, what gets leaked to a newspaper reporter. So that all has to be documented. So when you see something on TV, you know, before most times, you know, we'll see the scripts that the media guys are putting together before they go on, just to ask us one more time, is this accurate? Is this correct? Can we say this? So I think they are pretty diligent about that.
So you bring them the facts, Michael, and then they poll test it to see what sorts of information bothers voters and what sorts of information doesn't?
Absolutely. I mean, that's this. You know, campaigns are very process oriented, and it's not you know, a willy nilly deal where we go dig up some information and give it to the campaign, and they just do whatever they want with it. I mean, there's a lot of information that we give to a campaign that's never used, and it just may not resonate with voters. So, I mean, there are things Alan and I thought were just great, and when they tested them, it didn't come out that way, so it wasn't used.
Well, no, like what? Now you piqued my curiosity, Michael. Like what?
Oh, there may have been some a candidate who had some personal issues. You know, I'm trying to think of a good example right now that we thought, you know, maybe some violations, some skirts with the law that ended up being in the voters' minds pretty minor. So they didn't use them. It just depends. It depends on what the issues of the day are, too, because that plays a lot into what voters are angry about. You remember a few years ago, it was Enron and WorldCom and all the corporate scandal stuff. So what did we do? We were out looking for examples of a candidate who took contributions from those guys or who helped them if they had been in Congress through legislation. So a lot of it depends on what the issues of the day are, too.
Got it. Interesting. And we're seeing that now with Freddie and Fannie and all those accusations about who was involved and to what extent. I'd love to hear from you, too, Alan, on this. Examples of information that you guys dug up and you thought, wow, this is really going to resonate with voters, and voters kind of said ho-hum.
Well, I can think of one race in particular where we had a guy who was running his whole campaign was building around this family values, you know, platform, and he, at the time that he was running, he was making loans to his own campaign while cutting child support payments to his daughter from a previous marriage. To us, that was huge. You know, what more do you need to know about this man's family values? And yet the voters didn't care. I don't remember if it even got to the point of being polled. I know that the guy won, and that was that. Michael and I thought that was a slam dunk. It's like, what do you need to know? What more do you need to know? It was a small, you know, comparatively small race, but it happens all the time that you're working on it and you think you've really come upon something, and the voters are like, not so much.
Interesting.
But going back to another thing,
sure,
that Michael mentioned about the you know, the campaigns being diligent, you know, you mentioned that we do see a lot of things out there that don't seem to be well documented, and it does happen. And one of the dangers is that, you know, the Citizens United ruling, which the Supreme Court, you know, was 2 years ago and caused these super PAC infusion of super PAC money into these campaigns that we're seeing right now. It's all about free speech. And so anything that is politically oriented is protected by free speech. So there's really no mechanism. If somebody gets on the air and says something that's entirely untrue, there's very, very few mechanisms for anyone to rein them in. It's not illegal like it would be if you were selling a product.
So it's free speech, but it's not necessarily truthful speech. It can be really any speech.
Exactly, and that's why we urge people to look at the documentation. And you know, it sounds like it makes us feel sort of old timey. You know, please look at the paperwork, because it's so easy to be just, you know, led astray by someone who has has a powerful delivery, and they have numerous mechanisms, infinite mechanisms, really, for getting the word out there. And so we're just over there just begging and pleading, please just always look at the documentation and find out if this is really true, because otherwise you're going to be making decisions based on who knows what.
And we've heard from voters like Ed, who said he wants that true information. So we're taking your calls at 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Alan Huffman and Michael Rajabian. Their book is called We're With Nobody. Two insiders reveal the dark side of American politics. It's about the role of opposition research in political campaigns. Join us. What role do you see opposition research playing in our political debates, in our campaigns? Do you think it's helpful as a voter or hurtful? 1-800-892-6477. Again, email is exchange@nhpr.org. You know, Ed, our caller, asked earlier again what websites he could go to find good, solid information. And I think, Alan, you answered that question. But we've been talking about how you guys do like to use that hard copy documentation. Ed said it should be available to the public, all this information. Michael, it is available to the public at the courthouses and city halls that you guys visit, but how hard is it to get it sometimes? You've had some run-ins with some pretty steely-eyed clerks.
Well, it depends on where you go. I mean, there are some places where it's a pleasure to go into a government building, a courthouse, and you know, gather information. Other places, it's just more difficult. But, you know, our experience is the when we go into smaller cities, smaller towns, that's the question we get is, who are you guys with? And that's what they want to know. And they're very protective. And I think that you know, translates into more difficulty in getting information. But, you know, you just got to stick it out. I mean, if I'm advising somebody how to go to get information, just say, you know, don't be rebuffed. If somebody says they're not going to give you something, ask them why. Tell them, you know, say, show me the rule that says that I'm not entitled to this information. Because, you know what, most information you are entitled to. There are very few things that governments are allowed to withhold these days. So my advice is just don't be put off.
Freedom of Information Act, Michael, how often do you find yourself filing those requests, or is it not that bad?
You know, we file them every campaign. We know who we have to file them with. Federal government, you're going to have to file them all the time. Local counties, you know, you can go in and get that information right there. You may have to wait a few days, and you may have to file some open records requests, too, if it's a larger request, if you're asking for something that they have to put together. But most of the time, you can go into a courthouse and you can go research this stuff yourself. You can go back in the records room. You know, they all have databases now, which are some are very difficult to use. But you can go in there and look through those on computer and get what you need.
Yeah, and you've said that you guys aren't above using some good old-fashioned Southern charm on some of these clerks to get the stuff you need.
Again, it depends on where you are. I mean, you know, the first thing you want to do is try to act polite and nice. And, you know, in the book, Alan puts together a top ten list of best ways to deal with difficult government clerks and bureaucrats. So you start off being nice, and you kind of go down the list from there until where you just have to use some different tactics.
Here's a broader question for you guys. Getting back to, again, the amount of information that's out there and the role that the information that you folks dig up plays in campaigns, I wonder what you think, and Alan, I'll turn to you first. At some point these days, is there so much mud flung, so much dirt dug up, that it just goes over everybody's head?
Well, I think you just reach a saturation point if you aren't careful, that people just they don't differentiate between what's relevant and what isn't. It's all just negative stimuli, and there is a risk of reaching that saturation point. I kind of expected this to happen in the Republican presidential nomination campaign, and it doesn't seem to be happening. But you know, at some point, you know that people are just going to look at it and say, I'm just tired of hearing about all this. And so there is a risk. You don't want to just be throwing negative things out there constantly to the point where when you have something that really is meaningful and important, that people don't care anymore because they've just become inured to it. So there is that. And it's one of the reasons, you know, sometimes we're brought in. We don't do a lot of strategizing with campaigns unless they ask us to. many times we just do the research. We're just the bird dogs. We find, you know, we flush things out and we move on. But in other cases, they have us stick around and help them decide how are they going to unload this information. And you know, and that way you minimize the risk that people are going to just become dulled to it, because there is that potential.
Now, are you uncomfortable with that role, Alan, you know, sticking around and helping out with the strategy?
Not at all, you know, and because we have experience both in politics and as journalists. A lot of times campaigns, maybe the campaign manager, maybe there's a media guy, have an idea of how things are going to fly in the media, but they don't always. And so we're happy to help in that regard. Our main, you know, one of the reasons that we don't name names is because a lot of these guys have just disappeared into the background for us. We're about getting to the bottom of things and finding things out, and I think that's what our greatest skills are. But because we're in the middle of these campaigns and we have a lot of experience with them, sometimes it's useful to say, you know, this was our experience in the past.
Right.
But you just can never tell what is going to fly until you start putting it out there.
Well, and to that point also to you, Michael, how well do you think campaigns generally achieve that balance of putting out too much information or just enough? I mean, you know, some people say, look, there's so much mud, I don't believe any of it anymore.
You know, I think there's a balance in between. I mean, you have to remember, you can't go all negative. I mean, you've got to introduce your candidate. I mean, you have to let people know who he is. And you know, I think that people are smart. Voters are smart. They're just not going to go in there and say, okay, you told me everything negative about this guy, but you didn't tell me anything about you. So I want to know about you. So there is a balance there that you have to figure out. Right now, as far as I don't see a saturation point in this presidential season. I don't think you're going to have that for a while. You know, there's an entertainment value too. I mean, you know, I would bet you if you polled the people who watched that debate last night, you know, they watched it because of the entertainment value. What was Gingrich going to say? Who was he going to blast? And it was entertaining. I watched it. I mean, I would have to say that, I mean, I watched it because I wanted to see how they were going to handle themselves and what information they had. But it was also entertaining. So people derive that from a lot of this stuff.
At some point, though, I do find myself tuning out. And I'm not necessarily saying last night's debate. But, Michael, you know, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it just starts to sound like blah, blah, blah after a certain point when it gets into the detail of either a member of Congress and how he or she voted, or, you know, a certain person's stocks or assets. I mean, after a while, it just starts to sound like blah, blah.
Well, it may start to sound like background noise, white noise, but, you know, a lot of folks say they don't like all the negative advertising, but that's not really the point. It's not whether you like it or not. It's whether it works or not. And if you read a lot of studies, you know, they'll show that this stuff does work. You know, people do remember it. They, you know, for people who haven't formed a real opinion yet, or the least knowledgeable about politics, that's who is most affected by these negative ads. So I think for some people, probably, you know, people who are involved in it or in politics, who watch politics closely, it can become white noise. But there are a lot of people out there who take this stuff, and it influences them, and that's why they do it.
You know, at the end of the book, guys, you write that when you first began promoting this idea of doing a book on opposition research, publishers hoped they'd get a revealing tell-all, you know, an account with the names of prominent Americans. And Alan Huffman, you write that they were disappointed when you said, no, we're not going to do that. What was your explanation to them?
Well, first of all, we don't remember a lot of them.
To be honest, 18 years is a long time.
Well, I mean, to be honest, do you really need to know the name of a congressman in Nebraska who got a DUI in 2002? I mean, at the time, perhaps you did, but we're looking at the bigger picture here, and what we wanted to write about was the process that we have been a part of, because we have a perspective that no one else has, being both insiders and outsiders, you know, moving in and out of these campaigns, roaming around the country, learning about the country itself, and in addition to the way politics works. So naming names to us seemed unnecessary, and we also, there's a legal issue in that we work on these campaigns, and if we name a candidate that we are researching, then we're essentially naming the candidate that we're working for as well. And, you know, we would just have to go back and get the permission of each of those campaigns to do it. It was, it seemed overly problematic considering the value that you would derive from it. The point of the book was not to just be a tell-all. It was to illustrate how the process works and what we can learn from our experience. So that was everyone wants the dirt, literal dirt. That's what we do. And so it was sort of ironic that we're not going to give it to you in the sense that you're asking, because we're not just going to name names. But honestly, I don't think they were relevant in the big picture. You know, 100 years from now, how the world changed, how politics was changed by the Citizens United ruling and all of these things, you know, what the American culture, you know, was evolving into through, you know, the eyes of politics. Those are the things that intrigued us and that our stories were about. And 100 years from now, I don't think most of those names are going to really matter.
Right. So you want to tell this bigger story about American politics. And Michael Rajabian, you want to add on to Alan's comments there real quickly, what you guys are trying to make here, the point you're trying to make.
Well, that you need to have some knowledge going into the voting booth. And the process, it's interesting to us that people didn't know that guys like us even existed. And we just wanted to tell that story about what it was like to be on the road, to do these kind of things, the kinds of things that we found, and what voters should be looking for themselves when they go in to cast their vote.
Well, both of you, it's been great to talk to you. Michael Rajabian, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Alan Huffman, thank you to you, too. Alan Huffman joined us from New York City. Michael Rajabian joined us from Mississippi. Again, they are co-authors of the new book, We're With Nobody, Two Insiders Reveal the Dark Side of American Politics. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Go to our page to continue the conversation. Learn more about what we're doing every day. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.